Parents and teachers, do you have a positive perspective and a trust account? Do you have or support a gifted and distractible learner? How about what is 2E? Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. You do not want to miss today's episode. Grab a pen, paper, cup of coffee, prepare to take notes. Like, seriously, our guest today dropped so many tips, strategies, and resources. Today, I'm talking with Julie, and we are learning that with understanding comes calm, especially in the 2E world. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am a mom and a special educator. I have sat on both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional. Over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a like and a follow. Now let's get ready to strategize special education style. Welcome. Welcome to our show, and thank you for strategizing with us today.
Hi, Wendy.
We can connect. Thank you. Before we jump in and I start asking questions, can you introduce yourself and let folks know who you are and how you strategize with our learning friends?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me on this wonderful podcast. And I am Julie Skolnick. I'm the founder of With Understanding Comes Calm, which is also, by the way, my mantra. And I am passionate about everything I do. And when people ask me to give an elevator speech, typically I'll say, I would love to give you an elevator speech, but my building is super tall. So put on your seatbelt. But I'll do a thumbnail today, Wendy. I work with parents who have children who are what I call gifted and distractible, or what's known in the literature as twice exceptional or 2E. So I consult with parents and directly from all over the world, so virtually or in person here in Maryland. And then I also train teachers on the population, the profile, and strategies in the classroom. Or for parent clients, I meet with teacher teams to help them understand a specific child. And then third, I also mentor 2E adults, which is a whole other gifted 2E kid all grown up, and I love it. So that's sort of the consulting side. And then I also do a lot of writing. I have a free newsletter called Gifted and Distractible, and I produce conferences, and that's pretty much the nutshell.
The nutshell. And before we hit record, we were just talking about the importance of supporting adults, because you start out as 2E as a kiddo, you're going to grow into adult. So I love that. And I think we're going to talk about that later on. But as we dive in, can you just help us understand, what does 2E mean? What does gifted mean? Because we hear these terms a lot. Are they interchangeable? How do we separate them out? How does one know?
Yeah, I love how you framed that question, Wendy. So thank you. So gifted is one thing. This is why back in the day when I started in 2014, when many fewer people knew the term 2E or twice exceptional, I was like, okay, what am I going to call this population so people know what I'm talking about, you know, when I'm talking about it? And so I came up with gifted and distractible, using actually lingo from the pediatric guide. And most people scratch their head over the distractible moniker when it's really the gifted piece that isn't understood. So twice exceptional means you're gifted, and we're going to define that in a second, plus you have some sort of a learning difference. Some people say learning disabilities. I like to say learning differences, because I think that umbrella is a little bit bigger. And that distractible piece, which stands for the learning differences, that's all of those diagnoses that we hear about, from, you know, the ever popular ADHD to high functioning autism, dyslexia, dysgraphia, but it can also, and lots of other auditory processing, visual processing, but it can also include executive functioning skills, working memory, anxiety, processing speed, which is really important to know about with the gifted side by side. So that's what twice exceptional is. We're begging the question, what's gifted, right?
That's right.
I don't want to steal your thunder, so go ahead, ask me the question.
No, that's it. I was waiting for it. What does gifted mean then?
Yeah, well, I love that you even know that that's a question, because how many people out there, not that I can see you, but I can see you. You're all raising your hands when I say it means smart, right? That's what you think it means. And it doesn't. I mean, it does. Okay, there's a little piece that's part of being gifted. That is the gift and giftedness, if you want to put it that way. But here's what I want you guys to do. I want all your listeners to close their eyes and imagine their favorite flavor layer cake. Okay, because this is Julie Skolnick's layer cake of giftedness. Pick your flavor. Mine's chocolate. Okay, now you got three layers in your cake. You got to think about the frosting. Okay, it could be the same or it could be different. Mine's chocolate. What can I tell you? Chocolate with chocolate. But the frosting piece, that thin layer around all the layers, right above, around, between, that's the smart, bright potential piece that people assume is what gifted means. And it is part absolutely of gifted. But gifted comes with these three huge honking pieces of cake or characteristics. And they are asynchronous development, perfectionism, the other side of which can be anxiety. And then you can think of as intensities, but in gifted parlance, it's overexcitabilities or OEs. So if you Google the term overexcitability and you see OE come up, it's the same thing. And there's another synonym, which is superstimulant abilities, which is very fun to say, but indicates how people in gifted land are trying so hard to put the positive spin on things. They feel that overexcitability sounds like too much, when superstimulant abilities indicates the superpower that you have with these overexcitabilities of being able to plug into the world, into this organic way where you notice so much more, you take in so much more. That's the outline.
I love that visual for us. So what are the challenges with twice exceptional students?
So if we think about the layer cake, all of the layer cake, okay? So you've got the bright potential piece, right? Okay, but then you have this asynchronous development, which I didn't really define. And the fastest, easiest way to define asynchronous development when you are not in sync, your development is asynchronous, is to think of it as the 5-10-15 rule, where you're 10 chronologically, let's say, you're 15 in some unbelievable ability and giftedness, by the way. You can be gifted academically, you can be gifted artistically, you can be gifted athletically, you can be gifted charismatically, right? So if you have the superpower in that place, your asynchrony, that's your 15, right? You're 10 chronologically, you're 15 with the superpower, but you're 5 somewhere else. And the 5 is a learning difference, or it's anxiety, whatever's happening for you. The reason why this is difficult is if you think of, and I'm very visual, so I always use lots of visual cues. So if you think of a 3-ring diagram, it's not necessarily imprinted on your cake, but it could be. So you got this 3-ring Venn diagram, right? And you've got your physical, your emotional, your intellectual. That's pretty much a human being summed up. If you're developing asynchronously, that means all those three areas have strengths and challenges all day, every day, every minute of every day. So here I am in my best class and I love this, but I'm impulsive or I have slow processing speed. So they skip over me and don't let me answer because they think I don't know, when in fact I'm just thinking and I need a little bit more time. Or I'm an incredible reader, but oh my God, ask me to write something? Forget about it. I can't write to save my life. So that dysgraphia, that comes, dysgraphia or written expression disorder, which are similar but different things, they often accompany giftedness and is a very big source of frustration. So Wendy's question, guys, just to bring us back, was like, what's hard? So I wouldn't want to say what's not hard, because I'm a very positive reframe type of person. What's hard is the world isn't set up for these people. The world sees smart or not. The world sees learning difference or not. And so the way my wonderful friends Susan Baum and Robin Shader describe it is, you've got your blue part, which is the LD part. You got your yellow part, which is the gifted part, and nobody sees the green, but everybody needs to see the green because you are all these things all the time. So it's hard because people define you based on assumptions. I would have to say that's the hardest part.
And I think that goes for, I know we're talking about our 2E population, but I think that goes for the whole world, right? There's a lot of us that have blues and yellows, and we want to be seen as green. And the fight for that is real. And the passion I can hear in your voice. And thank you for explaining what that means in terms of asynchronicity and what that could look like. I do want to step back. What does overexcitable look like in a classroom or a child in a home? How does that play out?
Awesome. Thank you for teasing that out. So overexcitabilities is a research term that comes from the psychologist Kazimierz Dąbrowski, who's no longer with us, but he had very quickly this theory called positive disintegration, which is kind of like the seminal reframe. In order to become your best self or develop your best personality, Dąbrowski said, you had to experience some major existential angst. And in order to develop that best personality, it was the process of coming out of that angst. It's a little bit Nietzsche-esque. And what he said was people who were more likely to experience this positive disintegration also had overexcitabilities in one or more of five areas. Okay, so that was like the background. Now, what are the five areas of overexcitabilities? Yes. Intellectual overexcitability, emotional, imaginational, sensual, which you can think of as sensory, and psychomotor. So I'm in math class, and I'm a math whiz, which, by the way, if you know me, you know I'm totally not, but I'm in math class and I'm just fantasizing about being a math whiz, and I am so excited, and I need to be up, I need to be moving around, I've got to think about this formula in my head, and my teacher's telling me I have to sit down, and I'm so frustrated about it, so now she's not going to call on me, so now I'm going to, I mean, it's like a whole spiral, and all you had to do was be like, dude, of course, stand up. Pace, whatever you need. So when I see preferential seating on a IEP or 504 plan or individualized whatever education, I'm always saying, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? Because under the teacher's nose for our people, not necessarily preferential. We need side of room, back of room, near a door, something like that, so that we can get up and move without bothering anybody. Same thing for doodling, by the way. I once gave a talk and this little boy was in attendance and he was like, what do I do? My teacher won't let me doodle. And I was like, here's what you're going to tell your teacher. That part of your brain, the imaginational part of your brain, wow, is it overexcitable? Which means you have superpowers in that part of your brain. You need to create. And in fact, in order to pay attention, you need to create. In order to pay attention, the psychomotor overexcitable person needs to move. In order to pay attention, you might have to daydream every once in a while to bring yourself back and spend some time in your happy place. That's the reality. So rather than, you know, what did I say before was the biggest problem? People aren't seeing green. Here's the other biggest problem, biggest being one, but two. The other biggest problem is that too many people aren't allowed to be their authentic selves. They're told they're wrong. They need to be fixed. Something's broken. Instead of just being like, well, what do you need? Let's just get you what you need.
I say that a lot and to parents and team meetings when I sit at the IEP table. What does that look like for a student? Like you had said, you know, does that student need to draw? Does that student need to stand up? All right, what does that look like? What does preferential seating look like? And I encourage parents to ask that question of, let's have a conversation of what this child needs. And in the words of Susie Moore, let it be easy. Let it be easy in terms of let the students stand up. If they're not distracting, if they're not impacting your lesson, let it be easy. Let them learn, let them wiggle, let them be kids. Let's put it all into perspective. 100%. I am Team Julie on this.
So I have a great anecdotal story that happened over COVID with a client. So I had a client, I actually don't remember where they lived in the world, but they had a little girl who was doing school in the dining room. And little girl would get up and literally run laps in the dining room around the perimeter. And mom said, what do I do about this? How do I get her to stop? And I was like, well, why do you want her to stop? Well, it's distracting the teacher. I don't think she's paying attention. I said, okay, hold on. Is she running throughout the house, out of the classroom, which is now your dining room? No, she's actually staying in the classroom. And who are we worried about? The teacher, the other kids? Oh, okay, that's very nice. And that's good role modeling. Let's ask the teacher what she needs, because this kid's going to run. This kid figured out what she needs to learn. Let's figure out, does the teacher want the camera on? Does the teacher want the camera off? If the camera's off, how do we check in? Do we do it via chat? What do you want to do? We can set this up, no problem. We don't need to like smash this kid into a hole.
I've had a similar conversation just recently with a parent of a student that I'm working with via Zoom. And she was very concerned that I was going to be worried or upset or something, that her little person was wiggling and jumping up and down. And it didn't bother me. And I said, it doesn't bother me one iota because I know the student is engaged. I know the student is providing me the answers that I'm asking, and let him wiggle and let him jump. He could stand on his head as long as he's, you know, answering questions. Fantastic.
Right. And here's the cool thing with the TUI population. If the kid's not engaged, it's the grown-up's problem. Because they will be engaged when it is interesting and important and meaningful. And most of all, even more than the subject matter, is if they know the grown-up sees and likes them. That is worth, you know, the Willy Wonka chocolate bar, because it's so often this TUI kids are told what's wrong, why can't you, why won't you, when will you, why don't you? And so when a teacher or a parent or any other adult makes a kid feel seen, understood, appreciated, it is 180 degrees different.
Again, I have to say that's best practice for a classroom in general, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, as humans, you want to be seen and you want to feel appreciated and valued, and you want to feel that what you say matters. And so I think that this would be good practice for every student within a classroom to really try to understand what their learning preferences are and to be able to support that as much as you can while engaging with a student in a classroom environment. Why is 2E an important term to use in the special education world?
So it's the same thing. So it depends on how good you are at compensating and masking. If you're really good at compensating and masking the hard part, you know, people will see you as gifted and not as TUI. If you're not so good, or you really need supports in your LD area, and by the way, that first scenario is exhausting, frustrating, and absolutely leads to burnout. So it's not good to try to do that. But if you are all you are, all that's seen, all that's, if people are deficit focusing, then they don't see the gifted part. So I got to tell you, I did a series of talks for an organization called Yachad, which is all special needs. And I was the first person to talk about 2E, and afterwards, and I did it in Baltimore, I did it in Florida, and then COVID. And all these teachers came up to me afterwards and were like, I had no idea, and my classroom's filled with those kids. Wendy, I want to circle back to what you're talking about best practices in a classroom, because it's very true. Everything that I teach for 2E is best practices in parenting, best practices in the classroom. But because human nature is such, we gravitate towards those who are easy, and 2E kids are not easy. So my mantra for teachers is find the hardest kid to love and love them the hardest, because that's what needs to happen.
Say that again, please.
Find the hardest kid to love and love him the hardest. That's one of my many mantras.
So Julie, if a student is bright, and I know we're talking a lot about a classroom, but I hope that this will transition to a family system and in a home as well. If I had a bright learner in my classroom, how would I know that there could be a potential of a learning difference? So it's kind of a two-part question. And the reason I'm asking is because I've sat at many AP tables where this conversation comes up and it becomes this, you know, friction within the IEP team of, I have this bright student, they're doing fine. So why would we need to give them an IEP? So how can we kind of clear that for our listeners?
Well, first of all, there's a Supreme Court case called Andrew F. E-N-D-R-E-W-F. And that really talks about that everybody has to have the supports that they need and to be challenged in the way that they need. And I hear time and time again, the IEP, he's doing grade level, so he's fine. The problem is if your potential or your ability is above grade level, or you need enrichment, or you're below grade level, and therefore, well, he's not gifted. That's the teasing apart that Wendy, you asked about in such a beautiful way before, like how do we tease all this apart? And so if we know that a kid is quote bright, now what does that mean? That means, and parents should have a big say in this, that means the kid, you know, does things that sometimes parents don't know, because this is genetic. So it's throughout the family. But if you start talking to people and you're like, oh, my kid's been reading, or my kid like builds things, or my kid's artwork is like really good, or my kid's athletic, or my kid's, you know, doing these strategy games, it's probably an indication that there is, and giftedness, to be fair, even though I do my layer cake, giftedness is measured by an IQ test in this country. So, but that also is complicated for 2E because some of the distractibility piece, gifted and distractible, masks in a testing situation. So even though we're like, wow, winding on a windy road here, one really important message is if you get your child or yourself as a 2E adult evaluated, it can't be just with anybody. It needs to be with somebody who understands, knows how to assess the subtests, knows how to take out the working memory or anxiety that might be affecting your testing ability. It's complicated. So you can't just go to anybody. And so your question goes also for parents, not just sitting at the IEP table or in a classroom, like, how do we advocate is really the question, right? So when I work with parents, I do a whole advocacy training piece of my consulting, and we learn to craft the child's story. That's what we do. We craft the child's story, and that includes strengths, challenges, what accommodation or enrichment works, what accommodation or enrichment doesn't work. And that doesn't mean like official stuff at school only. What are you doing at home that's working, right? How do we collaborate with school to say, hey, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what I tried. It didn't work. Or here's what I tried. It totally worked. And to really share. But parents, you should feel like you are the expert on your kid because you are. And please, 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 reframe negatives into positives. Your kid is trying so hard to compensate. They know what your expectations are. And so help them by giving them the benefit of the doubt. That is super important. And I actually just got chills, which means somebody who's going to be listening to this needs to hear that. So I know you're out there.
Yeah, 100%. So let me ask you, we talked about evaluation, right? And you're right, there needs to be a particular type of evaluator that really understands the 2E population. As a parent, how would we know what evaluator to go to, right? So this is uncharted territory for a parent to say, all right, I think I'm going to have my child evaluated, which is a decision that doesn't always come lightly for a family. What are some questions that a parent could ask as they're reaching out to different evaluators, neuropsychologists that can do an evaluation to better understand and tease out how your child learns?
So that's really two questions. One is how do we find these people? And then once we find them, what do we ask them, right? Okay. So the first question, how do you find an evaluator? The first place I would go is to senggifted.org, S-E-N-G-I-F-T-E-D.org, which stands for Supporting the Emotional Needs of the Gifted. I'm the Maryland liaison for SANG. I'm a very big supporter of SANG. It's sort of where I started as a parent, whatever, 20 years ago. And so they have a listing. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you're definitely going to find somebody in your space or somebody that's convenient or somebody who has availability. So I would also go to the NAGC, National Association for Gifted Children. And then there are certain places in the world. I mean, I work with clients on this, finding from all over the world, finding evaluators that are good for them. So you need to work with a professional who really understands and knows the 2E population and the gifted piece of 2E, not just the LD piece of 2E. And hopefully they have a network of somebody that they can reach out to as well. We also have the Gifted Development Center here in Colorado, meaning in the US. And, you know, there are other bright spots, but that's a good start. The questions, I love that you asked that. So cool news, my book, Gifted and Distractible, is coming out in the fall, which is very exciting. And I have 30 worksheets in the back of this book. And one of them is questions to ask evaluators. So it's in there. Your first question is, what is 2E? Ask the big general honking question, because if they're like, well, all my clients are 2E, or, you know, and they kind of say, you know, well, it just means, you know, they're smart, but they have ADHD, you know, that's not deep enough. There needs to be some nuance. You got to look for the nuance. Ask what gifted means. Ask what they do to tease out. If there is a learning difference that's going to affect their gifted score, what do they do about it? Ask what they do to compensate for whatever is tough for your child in a testing situation. Your child needs to eat, your child needs to get up, your child is anxious. Like, how are they going to mitigate for them? How do they get rapport? What's their strategies for rapport with your child? Ask them, you know, what work they've done with gifted. What do they know about gifted? So asking those very general, but then very specific to your child questions are really important. Also, this is super important, guys. I really want evaluators to meet with the child. I want them to meet with the child to talk about, in this way, how their brain works. That's what they're, not what's wrong, not what they need help with, but like, what does their brain do? How's their brain wired? What's their neurology? Because everybody's different. But when you're neurodiverse, we need to know, like, what's the cool stuff, man? What parts of you, like, wow, you know, kid comes in, emotion dysregulation. Okay, so one of my intake forms has, like, I don't even know, I haven't counted, but probably 30 things you can check off, from ADHD to sitting at the table to morning routine, evening routine, anxiety, all that stuff. Everybody, I think I've had two since 2014, not check off emotion dysregulation. So, you know, a kid is emotionally dysregulated, rather than saying, yeah, you get affected too much, you're intense, so we need to figure out how to tamper that down. It's like, wow, you are in tune with the world. And you are like, you're like a spy. You notice everything that happens around you. You're like a giant vacuum cleaner. Nothing gets by, right? Like, there are ways to talk about, and then what we have to do is talk about, like, the cost benefit analysis. When is this awesome? And when is this hard? And when it's hard, does it matter? Because if it matters and you really need to emote in that way, but it gets you to the principal's office, but you don't care because you got to emote, then that's your cost benefit analysis you just did, right? You're an independent being. And that's hard for parents. That's hard for parents to, like, let that piece go. But until and unless you let your kid be their person, they're always trying to be somebody else's person.
Yeah.
And that's really a yucky message. As much as parents, I know you're doing that out of the kindness of your heart because you see the train coming down the track and it's going to crash. I know that. I know that's what you're seeing. And that's what you're trying to help with. There are ways to kind of, like, foster independence and agency for your child to be able to learn from those situations and change their organic responses.
Can you give us an example of something that a parent could do, just some low-hanging fruit, to let that path be for that child or for the child?
Yeah, I totally can. My book is 300 pages, 200 pages are strategies. So I'm just going to pick one of those. And the one I'm going to pick is the parent pivot. The parent pivot is when we go from being the frontal lobe, telling our child what to do, how to do it, when to do it, where to do it, reminding them, having reminders pop up in our phone. Make sure I remind so-and-so to do so-and-so, right? I mean, we all do it, guys. So the gradual and incremental step is the parent pivot, where you start asking questions. So you're going on that school trip. Yay, so exciting. What do you think you need? Where will you get that? When will you find that? And then they come home and they haven't done anything. And it's like the day before the trip. And you're like, trip's tomorrow. Awesome. So when your bag is ready, just bring it down to the front hallway. If you need help figuring out what goes in it, just let me know. Right. Like, it wasn't really a question, but that was kind of like a, you know, I just dropped a little seed. So instead of telling and stop, because otherwise, guess what happens? Your kid at 10, 15, 20, 40 is looking to you to solve their problems. We need to teach them to solve problems. And by the way, if they go on the trip and forgot their underwear, that will never happen again.
That is correct.
not that I have 3 2-week kids or I know what I'm talking about, just saying.
Well, that segues into, how early can you start serving gifted 2E children, since you have 3 of them and you are well-versed in this area?
Yeah, so I would back it up and say, when can you evaluate, right? Because we want to know what we're dealing with. I am a very big proponent for awesome evaluations. I am not a big proponent for waste your money evaluations that are bread and butter and don't really delve. So typically the industry says not before 5. I've actually had clients who've been 2 and 3. I've had clients with 2 and 3 year olds. And sometimes we know right away. from birth. I can tell you right now, my oldest like looked at me when I called to them when they were born. And it was like, wow, we were, and the nurses were like, whoa, you know, like we had this connection and there was this, clearly they had absorbed some stuff. So sometimes, you know, really, really early. I also, one of my kids once asked from the backseat of the car, mommy, do we need to live or do we have to live? Right? Like he was three. I called my husband. I was like, oh my God, there's another one. Anyway, this is my third. So sometimes we know right away. And by the way, that story about my little guy, who's now 13, I've been talking to him since he was probably three about emotional overexcitability and how, what an awesome superpower it is, but how it very often comes with disappointment because most people don't have that ability. So he's going to know what you're going to know, my son, you're going to know what people need, your friends need before they even know, but you're not going to get that attention back necessarily. And it's not because you're not a great person. And it's not because they're not a great person. You just have very different brains. And so you might have to advocate for what you want and need from your friends, because it's not going to be as organic as it is for you. So really, Wendy, depending on what it is you're talking about, if you notice it, it's time. There's a video on my website that talks about, it's on the parent page, that talks about how to talk to your kid about being gifted in 2E. So my website's with understandingcomescalm.com. And I know, Wendy, you're probably going to ask me that at the end anyway, but there is a video there. Watch it, parents first. Teachers, you can watch it too. It's really a great video for kids. I hear from clients that when they show their kids are like, whoa, there are other people like me, or wow, how does that lady know? You know? So yeah. So it's really important, not just for you to intervene, but for them to have awareness of who they are and what makes them awesome.
What about physical and developmental? Where does that come in with 2E kids?
So it's a great question, because not a lot of people actually talk about it or study it. There's not a whole lot of research, but I can tell you this. When you see somebody with a physical disability in a wheelchair or blind or deaf, most people think, ah, they're not gifted, right? But that's totally not true. You know, we're silly, the human race. We're silly. We have a lot of assumptions about a lot of things. So you absolutely can be gifted with a physical disability. You know, we have high functioning autism that are for sure highly and profoundly gifted. We didn't even talk about the three levels of giftedness, gifted, highly gifted, profoundly gifted, which are very different. Yeah. So it only comes into play as it could be another exceptionality.
Tell me about the three layers.
Okay. So gifted, highly gifted, profoundly gifted. It's really on the intellectual bell curve. So nobody really says 100% what gifted is. Many school districts start at 120, which isn't really, that's two standard deviations away from the norm. Typically gifted is 130 and 140 is highly gifted, and the profoundly gifted is above 145. So that asynchrony, the asynchronous development we talked about, the higher the intellectual capability, the bigger your IQ score, the more asynchrony you experience. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. So best practices actually dictates for within a gifted classroom to differentiate between those three levels of giftedness. Now I've opened up the Pandora's box of what does a gifted classroom look like? And frankly, there aren't many real gifted classrooms. Gifted classrooms should be very much kinesthetic, project-based, kids up, challenging teachers. It is definitely not your sit and face forward, answer the questions, turn in your homework situation. That is not a gifted classroom. AP, not a gifted classroom. And AP is typically what a lot of districts use as gifted. And that might be interesting depending on the engagement and relatability of the content and the teacher. That might be a place where gifted kids enjoy school, but that isn't really gifted learning.
What can you then recommend for parents to ask if they're looking for a gifted learning environment? I know there's confounds, I guess, within, you know, a public school setting, but what can parents look for or seek out if they're trying to support their child, whether it's public or private?
So really, I got to say, find out what your kid's passion is and find out some supplementary. OutSchool's awesome, by the way. Awesome for 2E kids too. OutSchool is an online education. Gifted Homeschoolers Forum, ghflearners.org is what their URL is. They're really awesome content for gifted learners. Otherwise, you know, if you want to look for gifted, what whoever's advertising or marketing themselves as gifted or 2E, and you just got to ask a whole lot of questions. Because if it's just like, well, we give them more work and we have them, you know, they have to write more and it's not gifted. That's high achievers. High achievers is very different than gifted.
What does it look like for our multilingual students?
So I think I mentioned that I produce conferences and they're called Let's Talk 2E and they're all on my site on demand. And I had Wendy Behrens and Joy Lawson Davis speak about this very topic. It's so annoying, Wendy. Remember the kid who was like running around the classroom and all the assumptions that were made and the physical disabilities? Well, when you are multilingual, they're called typically ELLs, English language learners, which is so deficit focused. Think about the language we're using. English language learners. Oh, you don't know something, as opposed to multilingual, right? They're multilingual. That's awesome. So again, there's the whole assumption. And the percent of gifted in the population, when we look at strata, and I think Johns Hopkins has done research on this, but we know that the percent of gifted is the same in every culture, in every economic strata, and so I do have to say, it makes me nuts the things that are happening to actual gifted programming or gifted funding when we look at New York City or Seattle and all the fights and all the claims that it's racist, gifted is racist, and there's all kids are gifted. There's a lot of myths about giftedness. And so the frustration is, they're actually making a really more of a racist assumption. The problem is the identifying criterion, that's the problem, is how do we identify? And there's a whole ton of research on that. And that's a whole other talk. Universal screening, which is screening everybody. Parents always have a right to say that they think their kid is gifted. So all of these different pockets of populations all can be gifted and therefore 2E. And by the way, let me just say this really awesome controversial thing, which is that if I use asynchronous development as a defining characteristic of gifted, then doesn't that beg the question, aren't all gifted people 2E? So I'm just putting that out there. I know those of you out there who don't agree with me, it's okay. I'm cool, but that's my thought.
I like that food for thought.
Yeah.
Good. Can you give me a real life example of your services and how they have changed a student's life, an educator's life?
Because I could do an adult's life too, I'm just saying.
I was going to follow up with that. Uh-huh. I've not forgotten about our conversation about adults. We're going to get in there.
So here's the thing. I really love what I do, guys. It's a blessing. It's a calling. I just feel very blessed that I'm able to do what I'm able to do. And I am in awe every day of the way that parents and teachers let it all hang out and share with me and trust me. So I do have to say that I get a lot of feedback that says I've changed their lives or their child's lives. So if you're looking at your kid and you're trying to fix him all the time, how can I just get him to stop? Or how can I just get him to start? Or, why doesn't he clean his room? Or, you know, from simple to huge, I do a whole reframe. Like if I had a billboard, the billboard would be reframe, just reframe. That's my whole billboard, because there are so many ways to reframe. So here's a real life example, as you asked for. My very first client, this has stuck with me all these years, 14-year-old, really bright, ADHD, identified with ADHD, athlete, some writing challenges, as I recall. Anyway, one day he was in his private school classroom and he bolted. This is what I found out. Okay, so this is the first words that I hear. He just ran out of the class, and the principal and the head of school, they all freaked out. They said it's a safety concern. He has to be suspended and la, 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 la. And I was like, so wait a minute. So 14, like in the lovely blossoming of adolescence, those of you who have adolescents know how their job is really to be obnoxious, right? They should be fired if they're not. So this kid was, you know, pretty emotional. He had three siblings. We knew he could fly off the handle. So I said, hold up, mom. So he's in the classroom and he didn't throw anything. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't say anything inappropriate. he like got out. He knew he needed to get out of that situation for whatever reason. Back it up, we find out that the teacher was really pressuring him to do something that was hard, and he was feeling very embarrassed, and he needed to leave because something not good was going to happen. So actually, I said, "Mom, when you go home, high five him. He did such a great thing." Do we have to figure out how to make it safe? Do we have to like structure up and have a flash pass or some person or place for him to go so we know where he is? Yes. But look at all the stuff he didn't do. Look at the control he showed. So we can always reframe. So that was like a huge wake-up call for that parent. For teachers, it's the same thing. The find the hardest kid to love and love them the hardest. That is fun for them to hear. I also talk a lot about making deposits. So for parents, it's making deposits in the positive perspective bank account. For teachers, it's making deposits in the trust bank account. So the positive perspective bank account is helping teachers to see what your kid looks like outside of school when they're in flow or doing passion or volunteering or whatever, all the awesomeness that they do. It's also helping teachers hear positive things about their classroom. Joey really loves the book you're reading during lunch. Sally's thrilled by the lab that you're doing. You know, just to give some positive, because then this goes towards advocacy. Then the teachers don't feel so defensive when you come to talk to them about something that's difficult. Deposits in the trust bank account is because teachers have our kids more than we have our kids. So we need them to, out of the gate, find something positive. I don't really care if it's Sally always volunteers to hand out papers, or Joey is always asking me what he can do to help, or Linda was out on the playground and incorporated the new kid. Whatever it is that the teacher can give some positive, because there's going to be a time in a 2E kid's life where the teacher has to come to the parent, or the parent has to come to the teacher with something hard. So we got to make sure we have a little buffer. So that advocacy tip really helps too.
So we've kind of teased that you work with adults, that we're going to talk about adults. What does that look like if, as an adult, you have never received support up to that adult point, that adult age?
So adult clients are fascinating. I mean, all my clients are fascinating. And by the way, parents are adults too. And by the way, this is genetic. So 9.9 out of 10 times, I'm pretty much doing it all the time anyway. But when adults come to me on their own, because parents will come to me usually both together, not always. Even if they're divorced or separated, they come to me together, which is awesome. I have such esteem for those people who try to come together and co-parent. But adults will come to me for one or two reasons. They're looking for personal fulfillment or professional fulfillment, and they're burnt out, frustrated, feeling like job's not meaningful. Ugh, small talk, can't deal with that. Like, I don't want to deal with people who maybe speak slowly, maybe, you know, don't care about certain things that are really important to this person. And so we work on those things. I do an exercise called the tick, tick off chart. So what makes you tick and what ticks you off, and how you make those things tick, and how you make those things tick off, from anywhere from your partner to your child, to your pet, to the world, to your office, to your, you know, all of those things, because all of those things matter. 2E people care about the environment and the world and homeless people and war and things, and they think about it. So we need to tease out why does that, what matters and what doesn't matter, and how do we get you meaning? Because we need meaning in our lives. 2E people really need meaning. And so adults very often, you know, they've masked their whole life, or they didn't even know their whole life. And so many aha moments happen. I just met with a new client yesterday, a new adult client. He was like, "My mind is blown." Like, whoa, I've thought a lot about this, but I never put that and that together. And so when I come with the 2E lens, it helps to sort of filter out all those assumptions and things that you've heard from everybody else who didn't know what the heck they were talking about, to be honest, and to really look at what's going on and what matters. What matters? Yeah, what matters? That's another billboard. What matters?
Exactly. 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 So can you give me a real life example of how you have changed that adult's life?
Oh, I have a great example. So I had a client, a male in Portugal, and he was so clearly, beautifully, emotionally overexcitable and imaginationally overexcitable. And he was at a concert lost in the music. His eyes were closed and he was just absorbing. Remember I said like a vacuum cleaner, or spot, like it can happen in such a beautiful petting a dog, like lots of cool sensory stuff. Anyway, he was taken away by this music. He was just so enthralled. And he opened his eyes and he saw people on their phones and it enraged him. How could they be texting on their phones when this beautiful concert is happening, and how disrespectful and rude. And he went down this whole emotional, you know, and he was like, my girlfriend thinks I'm nuts. And I said, well, you're not nuts. You just have superpowers, you know, and we just kind of talked about it. And then we talked about, again, what matters. Like, are you going to let this disrupt your amazing ability to be in this moment? And what do you need to do to help yourself, like, get out of your amygdala and back into your frontal lobe? We do a lot of work about that. So that's one of many, many examples of somebody saying to me, so-and-so says I'm nuts. So-and-so says I'm, when I go to a hotel, I have to be the farthest room away, you know, away from the ice machine. I need this kind of pillow. And I, okay, awesome. You're self-aware. You should have all those things. When I go to a restaurant, I need to, and my wife thinks I get this all the time. And there's a permission. Like, I give permission to parent differently. I give permission to teach differently. I give permission to adult differently. It's okay.
That's a gift. It's a gift to give for folks. It's life-changing. So in your opinion, what are the top three things parents should know or do in their 2E journey?
Ooh, top three things. Okay. I will say learn. It's really funny that you ask it that way, because I have a cycle for success and it has three things. My cycle for success, but then I'm going to say something else. My cycle for success is understanding, strategies, and advocacy. So you need to learn. You need to, based on that learning, create impactful strategies, appropriate strategies, not strategies that you're learning in your parenting class because all kids are the same. Those parenting classes, I promise you, it's just not going to work for you. And so we need strategies that are actually crafted for your child's situation, your child who's in your home with you as the parents. And by the way, extended family has a big effect, or can have a big effect positively and negatively on our kids. For strategies for that kid in the classroom they're in today with that teacher and the other peers who are with them, right? It's all important. And then how do we advocate? How do we advocate in a collaborative way, even though this is all very emotional and we ourselves as parents might be emotionally overexcitable? How do we advocate in a collaborative way for other people to learn and to apply appropriate strategies? Those are the three things.
As we're winding down, I have a couple questions for you. What's your favorite productivity tool or resource that you're using now?
Productivity as a professional?
It could be for as a professional, or it could be as a recommendation for one of your families.
I'm sure you've all heard of this, or maybe not, but I love the tomato timer. So the tomato timer is something that you set and you say how much time you're going to work and how much time you're going to take for a break. But the important thing about the tomato timer is actually that break has to be away from your desk, away from a screen, and should be, if possible, incorporating nature or something to eat and some movement. So if you work for 20 minutes, take a 5-minute break, stand up, walk outside, take a breath, grab a banana, get back to work. And it's research-based that it's best, especially for ADHD brains.
Yes, yes, yes. What should I have asked that I didn't know enough to ask?
I guess you did not ask me why I'm called With Understanding Comes Calm. So the reason I'm called With Understanding Comes Calm is because understanding, when you asked me the three most important things, one of the things I said was understanding and education. It's not just understanding and education about why things happen, but think about it. You come home from work and you say to your partner, I had a crappy day. And partner's like, yeah, me too. I also had a crappy day. Here's all the things that happened to me and whatever. Now, think you come home and your partner says, oh man, it was a tough day for you today, huh? suddenly you want to share all the stuff that was tough because you know this person's listening and understanding you. When we feel understood, there's calm. So if you feel like you're in the grocery store and your kid is having a tantrum and throwing stuff everywhere and you're like, oh my God, you just need to stop, which of course we've all done and said, that's one way to handle it. Some kids might respond to that. Some kids respond to threats and fear, which I am not at all a proponent of. But if you stop and you say, what's going on and what do you need right now? Even though it feels like that takes so much more time, it's actually the most efficient way to solve a problem and to learn about your kid and help them feel understood so they trust you in the future and they don't feel like they're bad or broken. So that's why I'm called With Understanding Comes Calm.
But that is such a magical phrase. And I have three boys myself, and I've also used, do you want me to listen or do you need help with this? Mm. And they're just like,
I like that.
Whew, all right. And usually it's, I just need you to listen. Mm-hmm. Or if you go, wow, that sounds really challenging. Especially my middle one will go, thank you. It is. And then keep talking. And I think just those reframing is priceless.
Yeah. I call it, so, you know, you've already learned that I have all these little phrases and visuals, but I call it validate, reiterate. So validate is when you say, wow, that you sounds like that was really tough, or that doesn't sound like it felt so good or whatever. That's validate. Reiterate when it's hard to validate. I just made it sound super easy, but it's really hard. So when you can't validate, just reiterate the facts they just said to you. Oh, so you were on the playground today and Sally didn't ask you to play with her? It opens up the floodgates. Guys, it's such a cool, magical, like there's no magic bullet, but man, it's the secret sauce.
It feels magical though, because they do. They're like, yeah, and da 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 da.
So as opposed to Wendy, right? Like, oh, don't you remember Sally was over last weekend? I'm sure she really liked you. Like that we think we're assuaging, but we're actually undermining.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, oh my gosh, Julie, so many nuggets in this conversation. And, you know, I always ask at the end of my show, at the end of the podcast, what would it be and why, if you could have a billboard for one tip for parents, but you've already shared two and you're very clear about it. Reframing and what matters. 100%. We need two billboards. We cannot.
Well, we could throw With Understanding Comes Calm up there too, if you want it. I wouldn't hurt.
That would not hurt. So that leads me to, where can folks find you? You mentioned your website, but give us all the goodness so folks can come find more Julie.
Sure. Thank you for asking. So withunderstandingcomescalm.com is the hub. That's the main page. But letstalk2e.com is also part of the main page. But if you wanted to go straight to conferences or communities, because I do parent empowerment groups, as well as we're going to launch some empowerment groups for adults as well and teachers. So letstalk2e is another place to find me. Gifted and Distractible is a free weekly newsletter. And if you go up on my website, I think it's to media and then newsletters, you can subscribe there for free. And then I am everywhere on social media. So if you're looking for me on social media, I have 4 Facebook groups. So there's the With Understanding Comes Calm. Then there's Let's Talk to E Adults, Let's Talk to E Parents, and Let's Talk to E Teachers Lounge. On Twitter, I'm at Julie Skolnick. On Instagram, I'm Let's Talk to E. On LinkedIn, I'm Julie Rosenbaum Skolnick. So it's basically my name, With Understanding Comes Calm, or Let's Talk 2E, that you're going to find me. And I post all the time information, resources, inspiration. So there's just a lot of ways to find me. If you want to schedule a free 20-minute phone consultation, you can do that currently at julieskolnick.youcanbook.me. I do know we are converting our calendar system, and I don't know when this is coming out, but you can always go to my website and find out how you can book that 20-minute free consultation.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Just thank you.
Incredible, positive nuggets that you have sprinkled throughout our conversation. So very grateful. I appreciate it.
You can think of them as little chocolate chips on top of your 3-layer cake.
I need some cake now. Thank you again for listening. This was incredibly positive. This conversation has such a mammoth of resources and nuggets. My 3 special ed strategy takeaways from this podcast include layer cake of giftedness. You have your frosting. You have smart, bright potential. You have asynchronistic learners, perfectionist, overexcitable, I want you to think about reframing, making things positive and making them a superpower. And also, parents, think about pivoting from the frontal lobe of your child to guiding them and asking them questions. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you love what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for free tips? Head over to learningessentialsedu.com and you can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting, plus bonus questions to ask. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit us at Learning Essentials, where we provide individualized and systematic instruction, approach, and support for students with various learning needs and differences. We do this through academic coaching, educational therapy, and BrainCamp, our executive function support model. If you are a parent, we've got you covered through IEP coaching. We hope this conversation helps make it a great day.